Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Bright Shift podcast. I am Leila, the founder of Bright Shift and your host on this podcast. Today, we're going to look at the meaning of dreams according to Carl Jung, the famous psychiatrist and psychoanalyst, who is considered as one of the most influential figures of our time, especially in the field of psychology. We would like to improve our understanding of this concept, which is mysterious to many of us, and become more familiar with the Jungian way of interpreting our dreams. An average person sleeps around 26 years of their life and has 3 to 7 dreams per night. So is spending some time exploring the hidden meanings of our dreams worth the time? Definitely. On today's episode, I'm speaking to Marcus West, who is a Jungian analyst and a psychotherapist who has been working in the field of mental well-being for over 35 years. He has recently completed his term of office as co-editor-in-chief of the Journal of Analytical Psychology, which is one of the foremost international Jungian journals. Marcus has taught and lectured widely, focusing particularly on topics such as alchemy, spiritual experience, dreams, narcissism, and early relational trauma. He has published a number of papers and 3 books on identity, narcissism, and dreams. His most recent book, entitled Into the Darkest Places, is on early relational trauma. He currently works in private practice in the south coast of UK and online. Marcus, thank you for being here. I'm very happy and excited about this interview.
It's a great pleasure. Thank you for inviting me. And it's a pleasure always to talk about dreams.
Thank you. So a lot of people, perhaps the majority of us, kind of ignore our dreams and often don't even take them seriously. Or the most we may do is to look online to find out the meaning behind our dreams. So let's start by asking you, why do our dreams matter in general? And why is it important to understand them?
Well, dreams, if we can understand them, really tell us absolutely about what's going on in for us at that particular moment in time in our life. It tells us the deep truths of what's going on in our life. The problem is, of course, trying to understand that and what that means. And that takes a little bit of getting used to, trying to be able to understand the meaning of symbols and how to work with them and how to personalize them and relate them to yourself.
And why is looking for the meaning of our dreams in books or online, going on Google, is an inaccurate way of dream interpretation?
Well, dreams are so unique and personal and so true to the particular thing that's going on for you at that particular moment, that particular person. I mean, actually, that way of looking on Google or looking online or whatever books you can get of dream symbols, that way of thinking about things goes back a long way. Some of the ways the ancients used to think about it were precisely in that way. There was a papyrus they found 3,250 years ago now in the Valley of the Kings, which had a list of the meanings of dream symbols. So things like if you dreamt of a large cat, you were going to have a bumper crop. Or if you dreamt you were down a well, you were going to be in prison. So these things have very fixed meanings. But actually what we understand now is that actually the meaning, a particular symbol can have many different layers of meaning. And it needs to be personalized to the individual themselves.
I see. So we can conclude that there is not really a fixed way of interpreting dreams. That's why we can't really refer to a book or go on Google to interpret our dreams, right?
There are many different ways of interpreting the same dream, many, many different levels as well. Well, perhaps we'll talk about in a while where you can look at it one way and you can come back to the dream a week later and see another element in it. And you can increasingly over time, your understanding of the dream can carry on deepening and enlarging.
And could you tell us more about the interpretation of dream and the symbolic meaning of them based on the Jungian way of dream interpretation?
like how to interpret the symbols based on our emotional associations and etc.
Yes, goodness, right. Okay. Well, Jung had a lot to say about dreams. He's written, you know, a number of chapters, papers, books about it. So I will try to be as succinct as possible. But so he first got interested in dreams through his affiliation with Sigmund Freud, who wrote his masterwork, The Interpretation of Dreams. And Freud's way of thinking about dreams was that they were disguised, and that actually there's the manifest outward way of thinking about dreams, and then there's the hidden content. Whereas Jung, over time, came to see that actually it's not a hidden element in dreams, that actually we just have to be able to understand the symbol, and that he thought that Freud treated the dream images as if they were signs pointing to one thing. So as if, you know, a church spire, for example, he would perhaps treat as a phallic symbol. Whereas Jung thought, well, you need to treat it much more widely. A church spire might also relate to the church, Mother Church, a place of safety, religious experience. So he would be looking at various ways and levels of thinking about the dream that you can go on unpacking. And he thought about things in four particular ways. He thought that the dream could be thought of in an objective, a subjective, a transference, and an archetypal level. Now, what that means is that looking at any particular dream, you can see the way it relates to things around you now on the objective level, and things in your past on the, you know, on the historic level, and then also on the subjective level. So what these things might mean to as parts of yourself, the way you see things inside yourself. And then the transference level would be how you relate to other people in this way. I'll perhaps give an example in a minute. And then the archetypal level would be what this tells you about all ways of being, and you know, how this might relate to everyone, how people might have this in common, and how this is perhaps reflected in myths and things like that. So he would be looking at a dream on all these different levels, and we can similarly look at a dream on all these different levels, look at all the different layers that are there. So what it tells us about our life now, what it tells us about ourselves, what it tells us about how we relate to others, and what it tells us about being human.
Wow, I think it will be, it's fascinating, and it's kind of difficult to distinguish between all these categories.
Absolutely, and they all run together. And it's, yes, absolutely, it's difficult. One time one might be looking at it more on a, well, what does this tell me about my life now? Or sometimes what does this tell me about me and the way I go about things? Is this person who's attacking me, for example, it's a dream of someone is attacking me. Is this that you're at somebody in reality is going to attack you? Or is it there's a part of yourself, there's a conflict, an inner conflict that's going on that you're being attacked by a part of yourself that you're not ready to accept yet? Or is it in a particular relationship? If you're in therapy, you're feeling attracted by the therapist? Or is there something about some archetypal story about how, you know, for example, the hero's journey, how we have to deal with feeling attacked and stand up for ourselves? And, you know, these different levels all can apply to dreams and dreams.
Okay. So how can one come to learn all these levels and, you know, their complexities and meanings? It's a long journey, I guess.
Well, the simplest way of doing it, and this is said by Aristotle, again, many centuries, millennia ago. He said that the person who best understands dreams is the person who understands resemblances. So what you do is when you have a particular symbol, you make associations. You see what this reminds you of. So if you have your own dream, you might write down, the first thing to do about a dream is say, I don't know what this means. Don't put any pressure on yourself to think, oh my goodness, I've got to find out the meaning of this dream. Because in a way you can kill it that way. It's about keeping the dream alive and seeing what comes to you about the dream. So if you've got a dream about being attacked, you would think, okay, well, who was this person in the dream? What do they look like? What's my associations to that? Have I been attacked before? You start to build up a set of associations which are then very personal to you. And slowly a meaning will occur to you. And, you know, if you've got a complex dream with lots of different parts, a story starts unfolding and you've associated to the various different parts. And suddenly there'll be a moment when the penny drops and you think, oh, of course, that's what it's about. And then, you know, the week later you can say, oh, it's also about this. Oh, it's also about that. So it's a rich process. Exploration, really. It really is about exploring it and allowing yourself to explore.
So it's very personal. Like an example of that could be if I have a dream of a dolphin, then I have to refer to my own emotions and experiences and think, what does a dolphin mean to me? And then based on that meaning, I can kind of get an idea of what that dream is trying to tell me.
Thinking about what you said about dolphins, I just wanted to say a bit more about what happens when the person runs out of associations and about how you can amplify, as you would call it, and elaborate on the images and the symbols. What happens is that actually you can do this in relation to the archetypal level, by which I mean the level at which people have before found the meanings to apply. Now I know this in a way goes back to what I was saying earlier about the way the ancients dealt with symbols, treating each symbol having a particular meaning. But these again should be treated as potential, as things that could change, that are tentative. And if they fit with the person who's done the dreaming, then that's the real sign of success. So typical things that one might find in a dream, and as I say, first of all, you look at what the person's own associations are. But if someone dreams of a house, it tends to be a portrayal of how they are in themselves. And you might want to think, is the house in good order? Has it got a hole in the roof? Is it falling down? And then there are particular parts of the house. So, for example, the attic might be the head section of the house, or the bedroom might relate to the person's intimate relationships, or the kitchen might be the place where there's food and nourishment provided if events are going on in the kitchen in the house. Or in Jung's famous dream, from which he broke with Freud about, he went down in the levels of the house that he dreamt about and came to, first of all, a Roman cellar, and then beneath that he opened a trap door that was in the floor and went down to the most basic level, where he found some skulls from the ancient peoples. And Freud, he was telling this dream to Freud, and Freud was very interested and said, well, who are they? And Jung thought, he thinks I want to kill him off. So he evaded Freud's question and said, oh, I think it relates to my wife and my sister or cousin or something, which wasn't very honest of Jung, but in a way Freud was right. Jung was trying to kill him off through this dream. However, so that's about a house. Something else that might typically be a way of thinking about means of transport in a dream. So, for example, in a car or a bicycle. Again, have you lost your car? Have you lost your bicycle? How are you getting around? Is it a flash car? Are you driving too fast? These are ways we get around in the world. This is our kind of persona, as you would call it, our ways of negotiating with things. Other sort of typical elements in dreams, and frankly, the most common dream I hear from people is a dream of toilets, or trying to find a toilet and going to the loo. And this is typically about how we get rid of stuff that we feel is bad within us, feel things that are unwanted or that we're ashamed of. And of course, you would ask for someone's personal associations first before you might begin thinking along those lines. Other common elements of dreams are sex, gender and marriage. In relation to sex, it's usually two parts, two people coming together. So something's coming together, something death, then something's coming to an end, something's dying off. Is it, so you might, if you deal, for example, of your of your mother dying, on an objective level, as we were saying, this, does one need to think, oh, is my mother really dying? Have I missed something? Is the dream trying to tell me something? And you might well be picking something up. Or is there something on the subjective level, something about the relationship with mother that's changing and dying off, and you're changing? Or if in the transference level, in the relational level, is there something about the way you're relating to the person that you're dreaming about as your mother? And is that kind of mothering relationship changing? And there's something about the archetypal level of us separating from mothers that might also be related to that. Dreams of flying are also a common one. I tend to think of those as dreams where something can't be sustained, and you can fly for so long, but eventually you have to come down to earth. So often about feelings, and dreams about hotels are often about being in temporary states. It's not places you stay, but these are temporary states of mind. And perhaps the final thing worth saying is thinking about the elements in the dream: the earth, air, fire, and water. So is the person on solid ground? Are they in the middle of the desert? Are they climbing a rocky mountain? These will tell you about the sort of environment the person is feeling and experiencing themselves as in. Similarly, dream about being by the sea or being in the water. What's the water like? Are you in the middle of the ocean? Are you about to be swept over by a tsunami? Are you flowing gently down the stream? This is the water being tending to be about your emotional state, your emotional life. And again, you would ask for someone's personal associations for that first. Air tends to be about thought and thinking and moving around quickly in the air. Could relate to flying, particular states of mind that don't last. And fire, what's the fire doing in the dream? Is the fire, if you've got a fire in your house, is there something passionate going on that threatens the structure of your house? You need to think about that as well. So those are some of the ways we can amplify a dream on the archetypal level. And there are lots more ways of doing that. And there are lots more levels. And, thinking about the myth of dolphins mythically, and for the Greeks anyway, were extremely helpful creatures who could come along. They lived in a watery medium. So one might think of something emotionally, but something emotionally helpful that is going on. It is symbolized by the dolphin as one level of meaning of a particular symbol in a dream.
Thanks, Marcus. That was a really great guide for anyone who wants to go further and explore their dreams on a deeper level. We know that dreams can be a portal to our psychological state as well, but it seems that in addition to their psychological aspect, Jung also perceived dreams as a tool for a sort of divine communication, where dreams and their hidden symbolic messages can tell us something higher, or in other words, a tool for communication from the above, from the self, where the self is considered as transcendent. Could you share your outlook on this concept?
Yes, well, you've put your finger on the essence of Jungian theory here, and I think you probably said in your introduction that I'm a Jungian analyst. So Jung was very much aware that what we're aware of and the way we see ourselves in terms of our ego is very limited, and that actually if we can learn to listen to ourselves, we can learn to listen to what we call the self with a capital S. That is where the wisdom lies, that's much greater than the way we see ourselves at any particular time. So he saw dreams as trying to offer a compensation for the narrow view we hold of ourselves. And he saw that we are all the time, if we can learn to listen to it, if we can learn to trust, we're being guided in our lives by this larger self. And the self is trying to lead us on the path of, he called the path of individuation, so the path of self-development. And if we can put aside our narrow concerns and listen to this wider view, and this comes up in dreams, or it may also come up in symptoms or intuitions, or anything is a communication from this, if you're a higher self or deeper self, that the art is in coming to trust in that and coming to live by that and live more truly from one's deeper self.
Okay. So do you mean that deeper self or that higher self is trying to guide us in our life through our dreams?
Yes, absolutely. Through our dreams, through our feelings, through our intuitions. And in a way, this is what dreams are about. They are that part of our psyche is all the time monitoring where we are. What's going on in our life? Am I in the right place for me? Is it safe? And what's happening in this relationship? And that is what our dreams are doing, is working on and trying to process our daily experience and our daily lives, trying to think and feel what is right for us. Where should we be? Are we doing the right thing for us now? And dreams can sometimes signal a radical change in our life that we need to be able to embrace.
We can really use them for our self-discovery and self-improvement journey. For some of our listeners who may not be that familiar with the concept of ego and self in Jungian psychology, could you briefly tell us what they are, how they are defined, the ego, the self?
Yes. Well, the ego is the everyday part of ourselves that we've come to know, that it's come to be built up through our lives thus far. But often what happens as we are developing in life, that there are certain parts of ourselves that haven't been developed. For example, perhaps if our parents didn't like us to be boastful or angry or whatever was, we have to fit into the society and the family culture we're in, so that certain parts of ourselves don't get to be expressed. It may also be our vulnerable or loving parts, because we feel, you know, somewhere we've learned that those parts aren't welcome, or we haven't been helped, we haven't been met with those. So those parts, Jung felt, they fall into what's called our shadow, the parts that we don't express. And it's not necessarily, it might not be the angry parts, it might be the loving parts or the vulnerable parts. Those are the parts of ourselves that are in our shadow. And of course, those parts of ourselves want to be included. We want to move towards a sense of wholeness. And our self, with a capital S, is the part of ourselves that contains all of these parts, and they're pressing to come forward so that we can feel complete, because we know that if we're living just from a shallow ego life, as it were, we know there's something missing. We're looking for it, and we're looking to feel true, we're looking to feel right, we're looking to feel whole. And that is what the self is trying to draw to our attention, help us to move towards that wholeness, that inclusiveness of all these other parts of ourselves.
Well, thank you for that explanation. And what are your thoughts on prophetic dreams? Science has not been able to explain it well yet, but we know they exist.
Yes. Well, okay. So here we have this deeper part of ourselves that is all the time assessing what's going on around. It can assess all these things that our conscious mind doesn't notice. And so it's all the time trying to think about where we are and where, what's going to happen and where we will be. And so that part of our mind can very much try and assess what will happen in the future. Now, it doesn't always get it right. And the times it does get it right, it feels like it's been prophetic. But we know that not all dreams we have come true. But actually, the psyche is always trying to get it right, to get it true. I mean, there's some famous dreams. I mean, Pharaoh's dream of the seven fat cows and the seven thin cows. You know, there was the Pharaoh. He was the Pharaoh of Egypt, and he was very much tuned in to what was going on in the country, and his psyche kind of somehow picked up on what might be going on. And this dream was his way of trying to understand, well, trying to, the dream was trying to tell him what he needed to do as the Pharaoh of the country.
Interesting. And, you know, as you mentioned, there are so many different ways to look at dreams and different categories of dreams. So how can we differentiate between dreams that carry a valuable message and dreams that are just the byproduct of some physiological reactions, like the chaotic dreams that we may have after eating a heavy meal or watching a scary show right before bedtime? what I'm suggesting is that, is there a way to know which dreams require our attention, and which dreams can simply be ignored?
Whenever someone comes to me and says, oh, I've got this dream, it means nothing at all. I had blue cheese for tea last night. And, you know, it's obviously meaningless. I particularly pay attention because I think, aha, there's going to be something really important embedded in this dream. There are some dreams that come carrying a deep feeling with them, what Jung called a numinous feeling. They feel important, that we remember them really clearly. There's perhaps something sort of magical and powerful. And, you know, those come at a time particularly when something, maybe a transitional point in our life. And so the psyche knows they're particularly important and will maybe signal the dreams as being important in that way. But I think we should be wary of ignoring any dream because, you know, on the surface, it might seem frivolous or superficial. But often the most superficial steaming dreams can be touching on something that's really quite profound and important. And if we can just leave space for the dream to unfold, we might find in many dreams that there is much more than we think. Now, of course, you don't want to the whole point about dreams is that this is going on unconsciously. And we forget dreams when we wake up if we don't try to remember them very quickly, precisely because it's a process that's supposed to go on in our unconscious. We're supposed to forget them because we need to be able to get on with our lives. So when we're asleep, this is our dreaming process, which is working away at these things. But if we forget them, then maybe that's as well, because we don't need to have our minds clogged up with these things because we need to be getting on. But sometimes certain really important things we haven't been able to work on, and we need to be able to bring our conscious mind to bear on these dreams. And that's the ones we perhaps particularly remember. And those dreams, then we can do extra work on, you know, and maybe get some help with and think about, and see what, you know, try and mine the full richness of the dream. Yes.
I think sometimes dreams are helping our psyche to kind of find its balance.
Absolutely. I mean, Freud said that dreams are wish fulfillments in that sense, but clearly, you know, many dreams are not like that. And Jung said they're compensation. So that I think what you put it really nicely, that actually dreams are about trying to find a balance. They're bringing in the other part that's missing from our conscious attitude and bringing in those parts that we need to know about. And if we're feeling particularly low, it might well be that actually it brings in a happy memory. I mean, for example, one really curious example is those dreams of exams, when you're failing an exam in a dream. And actually, if you ask the person about that exam, you say, well, what happened in that dream, in that exam in reality? And they'll think about it for a while and they say, well, actually, I passed that exam. And it's, you know, the dream may be telling you that, yes, you're worried about this exam that's coming up, or this kind of, it might not be a real exam, but some kind of examination, but actually you've been able to deal with these things in the past and it'll be okay. Sometimes the dream is telling you it won't be okay, and you're dealing with something fearful, and that's when you're working on something that's problematic. As you know, of course, we spend a lot of time dreaming about the problematic. Often dreams are more often kind of a darker problematic nature, because those are the things we need to think most about.
Yes, absolutely. And how about those people who think they don't dream, or those who can't remember their dreams? What can they do? For me personally, you know, there are phases in my life where I remember all my dreams, and at times I don't remember any of them.
Yes, we tend to, I mean, no two people are the same on this, but we tend to remember dreams at particular crisis points when our unconscious is working really hard on something. And those are the times we remember those dreams. But there are some people who don't dream, don't remember their dreams as much. And you can help yourself to remember your dreams. You know, I think sometimes a really good way of saying, I need a dream on this. I'm stuck with this problem. You know, come on, unconscious, give me a dream here. And of course, have a pad of paper and a pencil beside your bed And you need to discipline yourself to actually, if you wake up in the middle of the night, write it down, because you might remember it in the morning, and some people are good at remembering it in the morning, but often, because of the whole point about dreams is that you forget, you're supposed to be forgetting them because you need to get on with your life. Actually, if you're writing them down, that's the best way of remembering them.
Great, great.
There are some people who don't actually dream. There's a certain part of their brain, the visual, who've got a very poor, part of the brain that forms images, which doesn't function very well. And those people actually don't dream. But most people, if you wake them up in the middle of the night at some point, they will discover that they're dreaming, particularly if in what's called REM sleep, rapid eye movement sleep, which is 80% of the time then you're dreaming.
So how would you work with those kind of people who don't dream as a Jungian psychoanalyst?
They're very rare, actually. They're extremely rare. You work with what they bring in their, you know, their conscious life. You know, in a way, there's definitely a continuance between what's going on in our unconscious and what's going on in our conscious life. And you know, just because they don't dream, they'll still be struggling with things that, you know, and then they can tell you about those rather than tell you their dreams about them. But the dreams often have a particular depth and resonance, and dreams will come to, they're the best way of symbolizing the problem you're having. And when you've dreamt about something, you can say, ah, yes, there is the conflict I'm having. It's nicely symbolized in dream terms.
Do you think for people who are not very familiar with like Jungian way of interpreting their dreams, do you think this is something that they can start on their own to learn and to, you know, start having a journal and start to develop this connection and communication with their dreams? Or do they particularly need to see an analyst and learn it academically?
No, absolutely not. They absolutely need to just start being interested in them. Start taking notes of the dreams, start thinking about the dreams, start discussing dreams with their friends. The most difficult thing is to interpret your own dreams, actually, because you're so close to them. And it's so easy to either dismiss them or think, oh, yes, I know the meaning of that, and really come up with something without giving it the chance to expand and really explore it in depth. And of course, then a therapist or thinking about dreams in the way we're talking about them today can begin to expand them further. But we can certainly do quite a lot by ourselves. And the most important thing is having an interest in them and taking them seriously.
Is there a relationship between our dreams? Like if we keep a journal and if we keep, you know, writing the dreams that we have, do you think we can see the relationship between them?
Oh, yes. You know, we might get the same themes coming up in the dream, but often you'll see that the theme will develop. So that the first time, you know, we're confronted by a frightened stranger in the dream. First time we have the dream, we might find ourselves running away. A couple of months later, we might find ourselves, you know, having an argument with the stranger, and they've got more features, so we can see them a bit more clearly. And then a couple of months later again, we might find ourselves standing up to the stranger and being able to really deal with them differently. So, I mean, that's just picking on one particular theme where there's a development, but overall, there's always a development in, we can see ourselves unfolding and unpacking and developing through the process of our dreams.
I see. So there is then another way to understand our dreams is to keep a record of them and kind of look at how they're evolving or the relationship between different dreams. And there are times that we feel completely fine and everything is going well in our lives, but we start having disturbing dreams or dreams that lead us to start paying attention to the unhealed parts of our psyche. Could you please explain why this happens?
Yes, it's very disconcerting, isn't it? Just when we think our life is going well and everything's fine, suddenly our dreams start bringing us all these difficult things, or we start feeling depressed or something. Why on earth that is? And it's precisely because our psyche says, okay, we're not in crisis at the moment. now you can deal with these problem areas that you haven't been able to deal with before, because the psyche is always pressing for the experience of wholeness. These things need to be dealt with. Maybe before you were too busy, you were too much at work, you were too dealing with some other crisis, but now you're feeling okay. Okay, here's the stuff we need to deal with to develop. And it's a bit of a disappointment, but hey, it's all part of the process of development in life. And if we can embrace it, then.
Yes, totally. It's like, I think the psyche was waiting for us to find, you know, a strength again to kind of uncover some parts of our issues that we needed to work on.
The important thing about all of this is about trust, trusting in our psyche, trusting in what comes up, trusting in the process of dream exploration, and allowing a meaning to emerge and trusting that it does have a meaning. But we might have to wait. We might have to be patient before we can see what that meaning is, but find out the direction our dreams are trying to lead us.
That's a great point. And do you mean like we should trust our psyche in a way that we know it always tries to lead us to the path that it's good for our evolution?
Yes. Even okay. If that path seems problematic and difficult, sometimes, you know, we need to embrace these difficult things in order to really be fulfilled and bring in the parts of ourselves that without them, we're only living a half life. So
Absolutely. The
psyche has powerful and difficult lessons for us.
What is the role of dreams with regards to trauma? Why is it that we often have a lot of nightmares after experiencing trauma? And how can we use the ways dreams are communicating with us in our healing journey?
Yes, yes. Well, trauma, by definition, is that which our ego, our conscious mind, hasn't been able to deal with. So it's in some way split off. And, of course, dreams are the place, precisely the place where these issues come back. And, of course, because our waking mind wasn't able to deal with them, when these come back in our dreams, they are disturbing. They're really problematic. And our psyche is trying to come to terms with an experience that we couldn't bear then. And slowly, slowly, by being exposed to it over the weeks, months, years, we're returning to this traumatic situation, working it through differently. Then we're slowly able to move towards a different accommodation with it. And it may well be that actually the dreams are so disturbing, the dreams are saying to us, get help, you know, go and see somebody who can help you with this. And if, you know, things that are traumatic are very difficult for us to deal with by ourselves, precisely because we can't bear to go near them. So, but the dreams, even though they're very disturbing, the unconscious is trying to help us deal with them, help us try to come to terms with these terrible experiences.
Many modern psychotherapy approaches, I think, they don't really talk so much about dreams, or they don't emphasize so much on them. As a Jungian analyst, why do you think that is?
I think psychotherapy goes through various fashions. And for myself, recently I became very interested in early relational trauma. But there are other times when another particular interest of mine has been attachment theory. So there are times when various things come to the fore and dreams appear to fall into the background. But actually, if you go into any consulting room, people will be bringing dreams and they'll be working on those dreams. It may well be through the lens of attachment theory, you know, working out early relationships with mother or looking at the trauma. So I know that dreams don't stop, even if people are writing about things from about, for example, about trauma or about neuroscience or about attachment theory or whatever it might be. So yes, I think dreams are still there. I mean, the body is another thing that's recently, and all these things are important developments in psychotherapy, appreciating how the body has been underrepresented. But, you know, dreams are a part of that.
And lastly, would you like to share some useful resources with regards to dream interpretation, including your own works and any other resources that you think could help?
Yes, well, you're of course, course, I recommend my book, Understanding Dreams in Clinical Practice, which is available from Routledge, and you can get on Amazon or all good bookshops. Jung, of course, I mean, and my book is heavily Jungian and, you know, drawing on that, but also very much respecting Freud's contributions and trying to bring the two together. Jung wrote extensively on dreams. Freud's original book, The Interpretations of Dreams, 1900, you know, is an absolute classic. It's a very dense book because it actually outlines his whole theory on a lot more than dreaming. But those are the classic historic books. And other than that, there are many good websites that talk about dreams, and I'm sure, you know, your podcast and work.
And your own, you have a lecture on YouTube about this topic, dream interpretation, which I recommend everyone to check that out, especially for those who want to, you know, start their journey with dream interpretation. It can be very helpful. Thanks very much, Marcus. The concept of dreams and their interpretation in Jungian psychology is complex, but you make it much easier to comprehend. And I really enjoyed having this conversation with you.
Thank you, Leila. I've enjoyed it too. Thank you very much indeed for inviting me.
I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode, and I hope this episode has opened a new gateway for those of us who are not accustomed to viewing our dreams as a precious source of inspiration and guidance. I will leave you with these words from Rumi, the great Persian poet, where he says, "There is a voice that doesn't use words. Listen." Thank you for being here. And see you next time.